We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming. And with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you're buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
Welcome back to another episode of Getting Real with Bossy, the podcast that shows you what it's actually like to be a business owner. We are your hosts, Kelly Bush
and Kelly Metras,
and we are so excited to have you join us today. How's things going?
It is a wonderful day as a business owner.
Sure. It always is. It's always.
Make it till you make it.
I hope by the time this airs, I have a fully working kitchen with a hood that exhausts food smells.
I hope by the time this airs that I don't have to. No, that's not true. I'm always going to have to. I employ young people.
Yeah.
I had to drive into work the other night because the cook didn't want to make the shift meal for the host. So I had to drive into work in my PJs because I was in bed.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know how bad it was. I was like, is this like a full on, like we're all fighting and screaming in the restaurant, or is this like a quiet F you? Mm-hmm. So we got to all sit in the office together and chat it out. Mm-hmm. I was so annoyed. I was like, but it's the industry I'm in. I hire young people. I've always said I'm like the opposite of Matthew McConaughey in
Days Get Confused.
Yes. Where he stands outside and he's like, what does he say? I keep getting older and they stay the same age, talking about the girls, but it's like the negative version of that.
Yeah.
I keep getting older and they stay the same age, but it's not a compliment. Like, it's not a good thing.
No, it's not. But that is the industry that we have. And those are the battles that we fight.
I love working with people usually.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. When they act like adults or human beings.
Most of them do.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Just come in and do the job. Don't be petty.
The same with customers, right? Like, we focus on that 1% of people that drive us nuts or leave the bad review. And not the 99% of people.
It's just the cost of doing business when all of your major equipment breaks down in the matter of 4 months and you have to replace it with no money.
Mm-hmm.
It's cost of doing business.
Yep.
Thanks. Not all the people that come out and go, we don't really care what you have. It's fine that you can't do burgers on Burger Day. We're just grateful that you're open. I need to focus on those people.
Yes. And it's hard. And we just talked about this. We did a 1-star review quick presentation not that long ago, and we just talked about it. So we should know better, right?
We really should.
We need to focus on the positive.
Yes.
Fake it till you make it.
Uh-huh. And you know, we're at the start of a new year, and that's what we're doing. We're focusing on the positive.
On the positive. It's going to be a great 2026, and our first interviewee of 2026 is someone we've been trying to get on. Is interviewee a word?
Sure. If you
someone
said
we've
it,
been trying to get on, said it, I could spell it. I could use it in a sentence. Somebody we've been trying to get on since the beginning. Not that he hasn't wanted to, or it's just we're all very busy and he's very busy and, you know, navigating all of that. But we are so excited about today.
The things I like about John Erlob, I mean, we always have called him at one point where I was like, he's like the godfather of craft beer. I'm like, nah, because godfather, I don't want that because that kind of gets into like a negative word. He's like the godparent, though, you know? Because he's everybody's guy. He's the nicest man. He has this voice that just lulls you into like everything is going to be okay land. And he'll help anybody. Like, what do you need? You need a little of this. You need a little of that. You need advice. He'll help anyone, whether you're a direct competitor or not, whether you're in an industry he knows anything about or not. He's always there. He's a wonderful mentor. He's been great with, he was chairman of the board of the Restaurant Association. So he's very knowledgeable about that kind of stuff. He works with the Education Foundation. He's just an incredible man. He and his wife, Patty, are just the sweetest human beings in the entire world. And he's just so dang nice. He's so nice. And he's run an incredible business and opened an incredible business at a time where that just wasn't happening. And it stood the test of time because there really has been such a rise and fall with craft brew.
I mean, we often talk about the pandemic, but the pandemic, I wonder if that's even the biggest thing he's struggled through, because craft brewing across the country has skyrocketed. I think another brewery just opened up in Rochester last week.
Oh, yeah.
And you just see these consistent, you know, opening of breweries, especially, you know, craft brew. Nobody's making, you know, a basic lager anymore.
But right.
John's made it through it all. And as somebody that's in an industry that's had or been inundated with new places that are the same product or similar product, right? It's really hard to keep your, how do I say this? Like your confidence in your product, right? Because mm-hmm. you're like, oh my God, there's so many competitors now, and they're not really competitors. I hate saying competitors because they're just other choices, and anything's another. I mean, you're another choice too, right? Like you could
but
choose
it gets
to not have Mexicans.
Like shiny new toys. All these shiny new toys pop up and it draws focus for sure.
And then you play with the toy and you're like, oh, this is not what I like.
Right.
This is not as good as my product, right? And you go back and you're like, okay.
Yeah, there's always the Rohrbach Scotch Ale, and you're always going to go back to that.
Yeah. And we always have it on tap.
Mm-hmm. Always.
So, because when people can't decide, that's what they go with.
And they see that. And it is something that just, they see it and it's confidence. And people see that brand, they see that name, and they know it. And I know I've always loved Rohrbach because of all the things he does. He's so community focused. And I remember going to beer school and going there and being educated. And I loved that. But I remember, like, the further out I'd go out in the state and I'd see it, and it was just such a wonderful thing. I'm like, oh, it's just like, I know him. I know that guy.
Yes.
I know that guy. It is just such a wonderful thing.
Yeah. And he's a perfect example of, you're not just selling a product, you're selling yourself, right? Mm-hmm. I am sure that he struggles with all the same things we talk about all the time.
For sure.
But he puts on the most friendly, calm face, and he, like you said, will help everybody. And I think the two of us could talk about him for the next hour and a half before he comes on. This might be the longest intro we've ever done, because we're like gushing.
And no.
We both absolutely are huge fans, and everything you've said is 100% true. He is always there for everybody, and we are so excited to have him on today. So we hope that you enjoy this episode, maybe feel some camaraderie in the path you're taking, and learn something new today. Enjoy.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Kelly.
And I'm Kelly,
the host of Getting Real with Bossy, the real, raw, and honest podcast about small business ownership. With our experience, 9 businesses and over 25 years, we continue to bear it all and share what we wish we had known.
We move past the must be nices and start getting real. Come along as we interview small business owners and get the true story.
Leave with another tool for the next time you feel alone on this journey.
Okay, welcome back to another episode of Getting Real with Bossy. We are your host, Kelly Bush.
And Kelly Metris.
And today we are sitting down with someone who needs very little introduction, but deserves a great one. My husband and I affectionately refer to him as the godparent of Rochester beer. He's the OG, the one who was there at the beginning and never stopped showing up, offering wisdom, encouragement, and that calm, steady voice that somehow always knows exactly what you need to hear. Alongside with his wife, Patty, John Erlob founded Rohrbach Brewing Company in 1991, becoming Rochester's first craft brewery and laying the groundwork for the vibrant beer scene our city enjoys today. Inspired by the small German town of Rohrbach, he brought tradition, craftsmanship, and heart to Rochester. While Rohrbach has grown from early growler fills to consistent can releases found throughout upstate New York, it has never lost its soul. That's a direct reflection of John and Patty's steady leadership and commitment to doing things the right way. Beyond the beer, John has always been a mentor, sounding board, and quiet champion for the countless business owners in our community. His impact isn't just measured in pints it poured, but in the people he's helped guide, support, encourage along the way. We are incredibly honored to welcome our dear friend, mentor, and Rochester beer original, John Erlob, to the show. Thank you so much for joining us today, John.
It's really my pleasure. Thanks, Kelly. And thanks for that introduction. That means a lot to me. I do appreciate it.
Well, you should wait till you hear our intro for the show, because
we had to cut ourselves off because we talked so long about how amazing you are because we are big fans. Yeah. You're big fans of the Urlaubs.
Well, thank Absolutely. You. Yeah, I really appreciate it. I appreciate the invitation. I'm looking forward to our discussion today.
So, John, you just decided to become a brewer one day. You woke up in the morning. You were like, I want to brew some beer. How's this
isn't
start?
That, isn't that how we all get started, Kelly?
Yeah.
Was it a happy dream or a nightmare? No, you know, it didn't quite happen that way. I was in the corporate world. I worked for Kodak for quite a few years. I traveled around and actually was very lucky that some of the places I traveled happened to be places that were just starting in the craft beer scene. I lived in the West Coast. I was in New York City, went to one of the first brew pubs, and I ended up in Germany for a couple of years. And I still consider that kind of the capital of the beer world. So I was lucky in that standpoint. But I also at Kodak realized that the corporate thing was not for me. It was good. I was there for 8 years, but I knew I wanted to do something. And to be perfectly honest with you, it's not something that I dreamed of or always wanted to do. It just was the right timing for me because of the experiences I had. In California, I visited Anchor Steam, or maybe I just had my first Anchor Steam beer. Mm. And I thought, boy, after drinking cheap beer for all these years, or let's just call it domestic mainstream beer, this was really pretty good stuff. And then I think I mentioned when I was in New York, I went to the Manhattan Brewery, which was the first brew pub that I'd ever been to, and then Germany, and then back. The nice thing is that I do love Rochester. I love it actually probably more now than I ever have. But I grew up here, moved away for more than 10 years. And because I worked for Kodak, eventually I knew I would be back in Rochester. And I knew that Kodak wasn't my thing. So at some point, I had to make the leap of faith and decide to make some beer and serve some food too.
Well, the food definitely helps. So that was the plan from the beginning, to do food as well?
Yeah, it really was, Kelly, because at the time, so this is early 90s, and actually the plans were starting in the late 80s, craft beer just wasn't known. When, you know, I always try to put into perspective, when Rohrbach's opened, you know, now there's over 9,000 breweries in the United States. When we got our license in 91, we were the 104th active brewery in the United States. So it wasn't one of those things that was at all mainstream. So we really felt if we just went into Wegmans and said, hey, I've got some great packaged product, or I knocked on the door at Salinas or Marshall Street and said, hey, I really want you to put my beer on tap, you know, no one would really get it. So we felt if we did a restaurant and we would attract people and serve them the best food and give them the best quality service we could, and then, by the way, why don't you try our beer? That would be the way to break into the market. And it's worked out great. And I do say this. A lot of people think I'm crazy, but I love being a restaurateur and I'm proud of it. I love the staff that we have and the customers we have. At first, that's not what I wanted. I just wanted to brew beer. But it's the best thing that could have happened to us. And as I look at the evolution of craft beer, without that retail connection, it's important for your brand. And to be honest with you, right now, it's very important for the business model, because without that retail, just wholesaling would be very difficult. And I think brewers are starting to realize that, and more are focusing on the retail part of the business.
And that is why you are the OG.
I mean, Rohrbach's is an amazing product. Your restaurant is amazing food. Last time we talked, Kelly and I were like, oh my God, we need to eat. The thing I love about Rohrbach's is you are one of those people that embodies what we talk about when we say that we are our brand, right? So every time you go out and you talk to people and every time you're in public, it's a lot of pressure as a business owner, but you are your brand, right? So whatever it is you're selling it, whether you're at work or not, people know who you are. They know how you are as a person. And not only is Rohrbach's an amazing product and the restaurants are amazing food, but you guys are amazing as well. And so I remember we still to this day carry Rohrbach's on tap. We only have, I think, 5 tap handles now after COVID, and you still get one. And people try to get that tap handle like every week. And every week we're like, no, because we know you have an amazing product. We know people want it. They're going to come in. They know they can rely on it. They might try something new once, but then maybe they don't like it, you know, and then I sit on that keg. We know we're moving your product. It's an amazing, amazing thing.
Believe me, that loyalty is not taken for granted. We really appreciate it too. And I have to tell you, you know, I think as you look at how you grow your business, a lot of people so we're in the manufacturing business. A lot of people say, well, let's just get into Ohio or let's get into Pennsylvania or whatever. We know that the bullseye, the best market we possibly could have is our hometown. So we've never ignored Rochester. We self-distribute here, which not a lot of people do. As you guys know, we're not through the big distributors. We do it ourselves. When our sales guys come in, they only have one product that they're concerned with. They don't have a full book of products. We need to be able to tell our story. And the fact that we've kind of stayed, you know, we can manage Buffalo and Syracuse and Albany. Beyond that, you almost have to rely on advertising or something. And in our market right now, I just don't think it works. So we were lucky not to try to expand geographically. Realize that the home market is your most important market. And I have to tell you, and I tell staff this all the time, you know, and you do it through good quality service, through good beer, through, you know, right, your sales guys, hopefully our drivers are friendly and nice. Mm-hmm. It's all about always focusing on your brand. Like, who are we? Who are our core values? What do we believe in? And what's our story? And as long as we can stick to that, it's easier said than implemented, but it's been our success. And it really hasn't changed over the years. If you think about what our core values were 30 years ago, or actually 35 years ago, they're pretty much it's simple. It's not rocket science. It's just focusing on your customer.
So you opened in 1991. What happened in 1995 that made you decide to put on a festival?
You know, and I laughed.
You weren't busy enough?
Yeah, right. Well, no, it's, you know, we used to do the, you know, any chance that you'd get to do like food, like we did the Lilac Fest and there were other festivals we did because it was all about getting our name out there. And the Brewers Fest, boy, I tell you, that was a long time ago. The first one was in Sonnenberg Gardens in Canandaigua. And no facilities. You know, it's crazy, too. You know, there weren't food trucks. You couldn't just call a food truck. I think we did our own food. The few craft breweries that were around, there might have been 7 or 8 of them. We begged them to come. It was the craziest week ever, but it was fun. And then it moved to Rochester and just continued to grow. But one of the we talked about values. We don't want to be the biggest, or we'd love to be the best, but we want to be a leader in the area. So if Rochester was going to have a good craft beer scene, we had to have a decent festival, a nice festival where people could come and that beer was front of mind and that all the breweries. It's our industry's kind of funny because, and I think you guys might agree with this too. Even in the restaurant business, it's not about us kind of fighting amongst ourselves for market share. It's kind of like, let's convince people that go to chains that they should come to an independent and we can do better and that the money stays here in town and stuff. It's the same thing in the craft beer industry. Brewers really have kind of this brotherhood and we all want to help each other out. And it's not because I want this competition to be better than me. It's that we want to be better than the big guys, than Bud and Coors and Molson. We know we can do it better. And the best way to showcase that is through a festival. Right. It's been great and it's still going today.
Well, you are better.
The oldest. You are better. And I think it's really important. And, you know, we talk about that with, you know, when we talk, especially in Bossy and with our small businesses, and you know, we can't always be less expensive. You're not going to beat the prices of Bud, but you are a much better quality, and getting together and letting people know that is the way to do that. And we do think you are the best for sure in so many ways, but being the first is important. And you were the first. At first I thought in Rochester, but now I'm learning you are the first beer festival and longest running in New York State, and I think that's incredible and everybody needs to know that.
Thank you. Yeah, it is important. It's funny. When you look at the brand, though, new breweries or new restaurants, you know this, get all the buzz, right? They're the exciting place to be. That's where everybody wants to be. So when you're a legacy brand, it's almost harder because you just have to. You know, it's funny. I believe, and I think you guys know this, I think you've been to the brewery. We do a lot of quality control that breweries of our size don't do. And we couldn't do it all at once. Well, I couldn't write a big check to start a lab. It was just over time we made investments in quality, realizing how important it is. But it's funny, we don't always tout that to our customers because I don't know that they care. They just want good beer. We have to be consistent and make sure that we never stumble and put something out that isn't the quality that we expect. But we don't go around trying to show the lab and the sophisticated equipment we have because we really are a little company. Well, we care a lot about quality.
I don't know how the question is going to be worded. So as somebody who has a business that's been around for a really long time in Rochester and, you know, was one of the only ones for a really long time, and then the market blasts open and all of a sudden you see all these breweries opening up, right? There's all kinds of Mexican restaurants opening up, and trying to not find yourself in competitor mode where you just know you have a great product. Yes, you're going to do new things to, you know, and that part of it is great because it forces you to get a little bit more creative and find new ways to reach people, but to really embrace your own product and the quality and what you're putting out without losing yourself to trying to catch up to the new buzz and the new competition and everything that's coming out that people are constantly talking about. How does Rohrbach do that? How did you do it with the boom of craft breweries that happened in the past decade?
Well, Kelly, that's a good question. It's not an easy one to answer, but I think we needed to be, you know, proud of our legacy and of our flagship brands. But we also had to be innovative. You know, we came out and we've changed the name since, but it was quite a few years ago. But I just kind of, and the staff loves this too, because they like making Scotch Ale and Highland Lager and, you know, Space Kitty, but they love the creative side. It's just like, you know, your chefs want to do daily specials because they have that skill and that talent. So we challenged the brewers to come up with small releases that would just be in the market for a short period of time. And that would help our reputation that we're not just a legacy brand or a brand that makes beer that's been around for 30 years, because that doesn't always resonate. So we tried to be innovative through these limited releases, and they've done really well for us. And they are small, and they're a lot of work because we have to come up with labels and label approval, and there's all sorts of different taxes that go into it. So it's not like it's not hard work, but you have to do it to remain relevant. And then I think the other thing, too, is that you just have to be consistent with quality, because people, other places will open up. And I say this about the restaurant, too. There's always new places opening up around us. It's just the nature of it. Easier said than done, as I've said before. We just have to be better than them. We don't have to compete. Mm-hmm. We'll let them do whatever they do. And it's the same thing for beer. We never go after another tap handle. We just showcase our product and try to convince people to give us a try. And I always tell them that if it doesn't sell, a customer told me this once. She said, you know, you rent those tap handles, and the only way is if you pay for your rent. I said, well, what rent do we pay? She said, you got to pull it. You know, the handle has to be pulled. If that product doesn't move, you're out. And I would always say, give us a try. If your customers don't want our product, that's fine. You know, you gave us a try. That's all I asked for. So we don't directly feel we're competing. We're just trying to be better than the rest. So as the market changes, or as it shrinks maybe a little bit, we're still going to hang on to our market share because of the quality of our
product. And I think you see people come back. You know, they try the new things. Everything's new and exciting. And then they're like, you know what I really want? I just really want a Scotch Ale. I really want some Peronis.
Yeah, Kelly, thanks for saying that. It's so true. We've, you know, been on Buffalo Road for so long, and we totally know when Jeremiah's opens up down the street or McGregor's. We definitely feel, and we feel it right away. Our Friday nights are hot. You're looking around, where is everybody? But we're lucky enough, within a couple of weeks or a month, it's fine. They're great places, and they're tough competition, but people know and trust what we do, and eventually they come back. You know, you feel it, but you just got to keep your head on straight, keep the food and the quality where it's always been, and you'll
be. We hope so.
Thanks, Kelly. Yeah, we hope so. I do always tell our staff, too, that we have to remember who we are. We really are in the food service business. There's things that we haven't changed. And even in the brewery, we've toyed with the idea of doing seltzers, do RTDs, which are ready-to-drink spirit drinks and small. But we are a brewery, and beer's been around for a long time. The market's not growing the way that we hoped that it would. But I think we'll always be there. And I think there might be just a little bit of a shakeout. I hate to say this, but it's not unique anymore. There's so many all over that I think, you know, the strong ones will survive. And if there's a little shakeout, it might make all of us a little bit better, you know, a little bit more stable in the industry. But we're starting to see that. I don't want anyone to go out of business. I want all of us to survive and do well.
At Selena's Mexican Restaurant, we are proud to be Rochester's favorite place for all of life celebrations. Family owned and operated since 1998, we believe that great food brings people together. From fun Mexican-inspired dishes and delicious handcrafted margaritas to our monthly tequila classes, we love creating experiences you'll remember. With private event options, corporate team building, and 24/7 catering, we've got you covered no matter what life throws your way. Visit us at salinas.com, S-A-L-E-N-A-S.com.
So on the legacy part and being a business that is one of few for a really long time, we found that as more businesses came in like ours, we could get different products that we weren't able to get before because people wouldn't carry things in upstate New York. You know, you're not in New York City. And that could be for us, it's, you know, food products, cheeses, even liquors that we couldn't get before, tequilas. Did that affect Roarbox and maybe even like your technology or your equipment that maybe you couldn't access as readily before the craft brewery explosion?
For sure. And especially in the early years, you know, they didn't have manufacturers. Like when we put our canning line in, Roarbox, that been 8 years or so, no more than that, probably 12 years or so ago, they only had these big, huge canning lines that Jenny would buy. And then as the breweries became more popular, they started specifically making products for our industry. In the very early days, I bought some used equipment somewhere. There was no conferences that you went to that all these manufacturers are trying to peddle their products. Totally, totally changed. But it's good. And now you have access to lots of things. It's different than, like in your case, the New York City stuff and how hard it is to get. We are pretty lucky to be able to get almost anything we need at this point. But it was not always that. You know, so the history is we opened our downtown location on Gregory Street. That was in the German House. And honestly, that was a great 10 years. It really was. But it was really time for us to leave too. For those locals that know it, there was a party house upstairs that they never used for years. And towards the end, they used it a lot. Parking was tough anyway. But when they had 200 people at an event upstairs, it just wiped our business out. We had a 10-year lease. It was a great experience, but it wasn't the right fit always. So we closed that location 10 years after it opened. We just ran on Buffalo Road for a long time, and we had a fairly decent-sized production brewery in the back end of the building. But we reached a point where we just had to get additional space for manufacturing. And I mentioned to you earlier, I love Rochester. To me, I think the breweries along the Finger Lakes and stuff, the more rural breweries, very cool. I'm jealous in some ways. But to me, a brewery historically is in the city. And we knew we were focused on trying to get back into the city one way or another. Love the South Wedge, couldn't really do it. We were very lucky to find this building on Railroad Street, which is right by the public market. And I always say, it was such a good fit because if you look at what the farmers that come to the market are doing, they're basically, or all the vendors that are there, they're small family-run businesses making great quality, locally produced products. And that's what Roarbox is doing. And we found this building, and in 2008, we moved in, and it was strictly going to be for manufacturing. Because really, the neighborhood during the day when the market's open, it's great. At night, it was a little quiet. And I just didn't see us doing a restaurant. But that's all changed over time. And our beer hall has done really well. And again, that's so important to our current business model to have that retail. So we've been in here since 2008. No plans at this point to expand. We've got a nice big building and we just keep growing. I think you both knew that we had a distillery in here for a while. Because the building was bigger than we needed. But we eventually grew to a point where we needed that space. We took that space over and we totally occupy this building.
I love that.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things that you do and that your company does is your commitment to educating your customers and the people that sell your product about your brand. I've always loved taking myself and my employees to beer school. Can you speak to our listeners about what beer school is and how that got started?
Hey, you know, thanks for bringing that up. We love doing it. So beer school, so that people know, is it's really we're inviting our retail partners. So restaurants and anybody can come. We do businesses, you know, with the stadium and other folks. We invite them in to learn a little bit more about beer. I strongly believe that service or quality service has a lot to do with knowledge. When a customer asks a question, you don't want to just necessarily pull a book out or say, let me find out for you. It's knowing the special, what it tastes like. If somebody makes a recommendation or asks, what kind of, you know, I want a beer with this meal. Well, what's going to go good with it? Or how is this beer made? Or what are the characteristics that would make it like a IPA pair really well with chicken wings or something? So we also feel that if we're going to have long-term relationships with our, we call them partners, all of our retail accounts, we have to provide value to them. And we figure if service, quality service is knowledge, we can help bring that knowledge to them about craft beer. So it's been great. And we really feel after those events that those retailers go back to their establishments and have a totally different perspective on why Rohrbach is important. So it's worked out great. And we love doing it.
Well, it really makes a huge difference. We as operators can educate our staff as much as we can, but hearing it straight from you in your space, seeing how it originated, it makes all the difference.
Yeah. Thanks, Kelly. I always look at that as those are opportunities, and I can either seize the opportunity and try to improve our brand or not. Those are more important than anything else that I'm doing at the time, paying bills or washing dishes or whatever. You got to do what you have to do, but it's good. And then I still feel in our business, even with the chains, we do business with some chains and stuff, but it's still about relationships. You know, I do business with the people that I like to do business with the reps, you know, they become partners of ours, our food purveyors. And again, if there was somebody I really didn't like, it didn't matter who it was, I wouldn't do business with them. So I think our product has to sell. You know, we rent those taps, don't pay for them. We earn them, you know, that spot or that spot on Wegmans shelf. Even Wegmans doesn't, you can't, you know, everybody says, well, you must pay for that space like the potato chip guys do. Well, the liquor authority won't allow you to do that. So the shelf space that we have at Wegmans, which we're very proud of, we earn that every day. You wouldn't get that unless people buy your product. But we have a good relationship with the buyer. And again, we wouldn't have that shelf space if we didn't sell product, but also have the relationship. And it's the same as you guys. If you didn't like our reps, you know, you wouldn't mind taking that beer off tap. So I think relationships are really important.
Well, and I think we see that on the regular with your involvement in the community and in different aspects of the industry. I feel like you're a little bit everywhere. What is your favorite thing that you do outside of the actual brewery and restaurant that is, you know, adjacent to it?
Well, and you both, and I am so glad that you guys have been involved in the Restaurant Association. I'm involved in the Brewers Association stuff. I think that it's very difficult to assume that you know everything and you can stay within your four walls and not be exposed to what's going on outside. As I really look at, again, the involvement in the Restaurant Association, the Brewers Association, I think it's friendships that are important too. So if I'm in trouble or I lose my guy that's cleaning my hood, I could get on the phone to either of you and say, hey, can you help? Who are you using? And again, are we competition? I guess we're going after the same customers. But if we can help each other out, we're going to convince people that going out to dinner is a value. There's value to that and that you're going to enjoy it because we're all doing a really good job. So, you know, it's those friendships, and I love what I've done with the restaurant. So we have lots of involvement in the public market now, too, and those are great people, and I love the vendors, and it's a community of very like-minded people. I love doing that, too, so thanks for asking that question.
Well, John, it's clear that we love you, but we cannot talk about Rohrbach and John Erlob without speaking about your beautiful and wonderful wife, Patty. What is it like working with Patty and having her a part of your life and Rohrbach?
Well, we're going here.
She is. But you know what? I have to tell you guys, I always say this and I really mean it because you guys know the business. We're not out here making ourselves millionaires. Patty is the breadwinner in the family. So she did have a career. And that's the only reason that I could do all these fun things that I do, because she was there supporting the family in a lot of years where we didn't make a lot of money. But, she has always supported me, and she's like I wouldn't say the mastermind, but she is a partner in the thought process of what are the plans? How do we expand? She is always involved in those things, even though it's not day to day. So I admire you guys for being able to work with your spouses on a daily basis. I love Patty like crazy, And she is really an amazing person, Kelly. It's a very kind thing that you said, and I'll make sure she hears it. But it would be hard for me to work with her every day. We just bounce ideas off each other, and that's a perfect thing for me. But she's been great.
So Rohrbach's is known probably most for its Scotch ale, but it has its standards, the blueberry, vanilla porter. But you've done a really good job paying attention to, you know, trends and what's coming out without being really gimmicky. And we love coming in and tasting all the new things that you have with your small batch series. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's funny. So the industry has changed. And everybody says, well, IPAs are on the decline because they were so hot and they're kind of going down. We don't feel that way. They're still the biggest part of, if you like a flavorful beer or a craft beer, IPAs are still the biggest thing. And we probably came out with 8 different ones last year. We had the Fuzzy Peach, which was a peach IPA. We used real puree. It wasn't an extract. It was really a wonderful product and people loved it. And it's funny, when we do our small batches and they sell extremely well, we don't just say, well, that's going to be a year-round one. We kind of put it on the back burner for a couple of years and we try to get that anticipation and then we bring it back as a throwback. So that was a great one. We're doing some things and we're planning this year. I think people are consuming less alcohol, and making an NA beer for a craft brewery is difficult. Kelly, I don't want you to get excited. It's really hard to do it really well. Like, we've made some, but they're kind of watery. They're not great. And we don't want to put a product out that's not great. So if Athletica, or there's a few out there, do a super job and that's their thing, then that's their thing. And we'd love to be able to do it. But what we are doing is we're looking at fruit-forward, lower-alcohol beers, you know, kind of like sessionable. You know, we had one that was called the Radler, which is like a German shanty. Shanty's more of an English style, which is like the Germans would call lemonade, but it's more like 7-Up or Sprite that's put in with a beer. We don't specifically do that, but the ABV was 4% or less, and it's very fruit-forward. It's great to drink in the summer. So we're kind of going in that direction to try to do lower ABV, but still, it's still beer. If the technology reaches a point where we feel we can affordably buy the capital to make a good quality NA beer, I would love to. Can I ask you a question? What are your go-tos? What do you like for NA beer?
Sam Adams, Just the Haze, is a fantastic product. Guinness NA is wonderful. We go through a ton of Heineken. But I really love what Go Brewing is doing. They are out of just south of Chicago in Illinois. And there's a brand called Busty Lush in Chicago. I'm obsessed with her and what she's doing. There's a lot of really great things happening, and it's just starting to boom. Athletic is great. They're doing amazing things, and it's becoming very recognizable. So we carry a lot of that stuff, too. But it's just amazing to see what's happening in the craft beer world for NA beers.
Hello, I'm Kelly.
And I'm Don. Looking for the perfect venue for your next event? We have what you need at the Union Tavern, Restaurant, and Event Space in Seabreeze.
Whether you're planning a large celebration for up to 120 guests or need a cozy, intimate space, we've got you covered. Check out the Brad Street, our hidden gem speakeasy, perfect for gatherings of up to 20 people.
With reasonable pricing, an exciting and inclusive menu, and no reservation fees for weekday groups, the Union Tavern makes hosting your event easy and affordable.
Celebrate in style right here at the Union Tavern.
Book today at the Union Tavern Seabreeze.com.
We have our meeting every week and we talk about what are the new beers going to be. We have a pretty good schedule for next year. We are doing some barrel age stuff. We built a barn at Buffalo Road, so that's heated. So we're doing some barrel age, like we do a barrel age scotch every year just because that is our flagship. We kind of do this instrument series to Instruments of Destruction. We have one now that is a stout with chocolate in a bourbon barrel, and it's pretty nice. They're sipping beers. We call it the Parting Glass series. And Parting Glass is in Ireland or in Scotland. It's the last drink that you have as your friends are saying goodbye. So it's a small you know, it's just that last drink that you sip on before you leave. So it's our parting glass series.
So I have a question. Does the AI boom affect your bottling or your labeling, or has it had any impact on the beer industry per se?
I think, Kelly, that's really a great question. I think it's affected every industry in our whole lives in so many ways. We are embracing it where we feel it can help. We have a local artist that does all of our labels, and she's really talented, and we don't want to go away from that. So we're not doing any design work. It helps us with menu descriptions and certain internal meetings, but we like the traditional way that we've done things. And I think in a lot of cases too, this is just my personal opinion on AI, and I use it myself, but it's a base to start from. I think too many things you see out there now, you can tell they're just generated by AI and there's no input. You don't make it yours. And that's the last thing we want to do. So far, it hasn't significantly changed our business. You know, it's funny, beer making is an ancient art. And it really, while equipment and capital has helped in that, it's still the same way you used to do it. We had the chance when we moved into Railroad Street to buy actually an almost fully automated brewery. And it wouldn't be that much more expensive than what we have. We said no. We wanted the brewers up on the brew deck making beer. Now, some of it's computerized, like you can actually plug in the computer how much grain you want. Well, that's fine. That's not the skill of craft brewing. But making beer, you can't sit at a desk and press a button and walk away. Or we don't make it that way. There are breweries that do that. That's just not who we are. So it has affected us in some ways, not significantly.
Well, John, you mean so much to us and so much to people in this industry, but we know that we cannot have you forever. Is retirement in your future?
Well, we are all dreaming of retirement, and John's been doing this longer.
Yeah. It's so funny because that's just what I was going to say. But I haven't been able to figure out. Yeah, I can't figure out who I can give my letter of resignation to. I don't think it's going to happen right away. I think I mentioned it before. The beauty of our business, too, I love the people we work with. I love our customers, like you guys. I mean, I've become friends with many of them. The people that I work with, most of them here at the brewery are much younger than I am. I'm a seasoned guy at this point, but it keeps me young being around them and feeling their energy and their ideas and their enthusiasm. So I just want to keep going. I really do. I do love what I do, and I continue to love it. It has its challenges. We don't close many days. But like Christmas, we're closed. There is just a little weight off my shoulders that we're not going to have somebody slip in the parking lot or somebody not show up for work or whatever. So I will look forward to the day when it's time, but I don't think it's time yet. Hopefully, even when it's time, I'll fade away and not like jump off, you know, like I'm done.
I like that.
Because right? I think I've just been working too hard. Hard to go from, you know, 110 miles an hour to zero. So we'll figure it out.
Do your kids have any interest in taking over the business?
You know, it was funny. Someone mentioned to me once, you know, asked the exact same question. And we said, no, we don't think so. They don't live in town and they have their own careers. And somebody said, well, did you ever ask them? Because apparently they heard of this family that had a family business and they knew the kids really didn't want it, but they never asked them. So they sold the business. And then the kids were so upset that they were never even asked. So we did sit down with both the kids. We have two girls, and they really do. They will be more successful than me, for sure. I don't know if they're more successful than Patty, but they both have their own careers. They live out of town. And I think both of them showed interest, but I told them that I wasn't going to do it forever. And you can't just walk into this job like you know it. You have to move back. You have to get involved in the business on a day-to-day basis. And if you want it, you have to live it the same way I did. And neither of them were at that point. One's in Washington, D.C., just bought a house. And one is in Chicago and just bought a house. So unfortunately, I don't think so, to answer your question. They still love the business. If whatever happens, I'm sure I'll make sure that it ends up in really good hands.
Of course.
Yeah, are either of you guys interested?
Do I trade?
Yeah. I know a good brewery, you know, if you're interested.
Why don't we rotate?
There you go.
Goodness. You have done so much. And I don't know that people know this, but Rochester has a really long history of making beer. and before Prohibition, during Prohibition, after Prohibition. I feel like our city, and maybe it's because we're on the river, who knows, maybe there's just something in the air where the river meets the lake, but I feel like our city has always taken really well to brewing. So we want Rohrbachs to be around forever.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, Genesee is a very unique situation because many cities of our size had breweries just like Genesee, but the vast majority of them, they never made it out of Prohibition or have been gobbled up by the big guys. Jenny is now owned by a bigger company, but they're still a local company doing really well. And they really had a resurgence because, you know, Jenny or, you know, the mainland mainstream products really were on the decline. But when they opened the brew house, it just, again, that's that retail piece. And I'm not saying that that drove the business, but it changed their brand. Everybody's perception of Jenny a long time ago, and I'm an older guy, wasn't always great. Like it was just cheap beer or whatever.
Yeah.
Now it has a great reputation. I think a lot of it is because they invite people in to experience what they have at the brew house, and it's such a cool place. So we are a really special brewery city. I think we got great craft breweries and stuff. Rohrbachs is proud to be part of it. But I think Jenny's really one that drives it because not too many people have that retail space and that kind of museum they have. It's a really special place. So if you're into craft beer, Rochester is a destination. And we benefit from that, but give most of the credit to Jenny.
Well, I remember even in the Finger Lakes, so the wine tours, right, were always big. You'd get a limo, you'd go with your friends, bachelor parties, birthday parties, whatever it might be, and you'd go on these wine tours. And then all of a sudden there was a shift. Then it was beer tours. Or, you know, like on your wine tour, you'd stop at a brewery in the Finger Lakes and you'd be like, oh, it's a brewery. You know, it's not, you know, and then it like shifted to beer. And I feel like this entire upstate, I know New York City, we're not upstate, but Western New York, Finger Lakes area is just, it's doing incredible things on all fronts, brewing and distilling. And I think Rohrbachs is a reason for that because people see your success. And when they see the success and longevity of a really great business, they want to emulate it. And that's why we get all of these new places popping up is because you have paved the way for showing people how great it can be.
Well, thanks, Kelly. I really do appreciate it. We're very lucky. Someone described it this way too. Like if you look at the Finger Lakes and the wine region, it's just like in many ways, very similar to Napa Valley, except we have the water. They really don't. I don't know if you've been out there. I mean, the wines are great. I think our wines are great. Now we have a food scene in the Finger Lakes. We are a great place for destination. I mean, we're one of the top regions, wine regions in the country. And I think to scatter breweries within that, I think is really important and really good. We live in a great place.
John, thank you so much for joining us today. You know, you and Patty have both been such dear friends to Don and I for so long and supportive to Kelly and I in all of our endeavors and such a mentor to so many of us in the hospitality community, not just breweries or restaurants, just everybody, any entrepreneur. I feel like you go above and beyond to just help out, and it's not gone unnoticed, and we're so grateful to be able to have you on and share your story today.
It's honestly, it's been my pleasure. I appreciate the invitation, and I value our friendship, and I wish you guys continued success, both in your restaurant business and Bossy. I think it's really, really cool. So thanks for having me.
Thank you, John. This has been great.
All right, there we go. John Erlob, national treasure.
Yes, national treasure. Yeah, take that.
He is. He really is. And, you know, so much we didn't even get to cover, right?
Oh, it was like an overview just of his story. I mean, how many years? 1991. So that's, I can't even do the math.
5 years almost this year. Because I remember going to his 30th anniversary. They did a big party over at the German House where they got started. And it was like 30 years. How amazing. And, you know, I think we take it for granted because he is a dear friend of ours. You know, of yours and mine, but he's really a friend to anyone. And what a great opportunity for anybody out there to go and pick his brain, because he will. And I think it's something that people don't realize. You know, we always say if you're the smartest one in the room, you're in the wrong room. And he's a perfect example of that. You can be in his room. Be in his room.
Well, and you have to assume, we didn't touch on it. We'll have to have him back for another episode to dig deeper, because we could have talked to him forever. But the ups and downs of starting as a startup brewery of all things. I mean, there wasn't a lot of things he could ask and emulate at that time because he was the one doing it. But the ups and downs, you go from that to now having multiple locations, having a large, canning facility, and the ability to ask him those questions, because he will be honest. So I think our go-to today for our listeners is, whatever business you're in, you need to find the person that's been doing it longer and possibly better than you. Even if you think you can do it better, find the person that's been doing it longer.
Right.
And ask them for coffee. And what's the worst that can happen? They say no. So if you ask them for coffee, they say yes. You bring questions, be ready, value their time and their expertise, and dig in, because those are the people that are going to answer you. They don't want you to learn the hard lessons that they learned.
Right.
And he's, I mean, they want you to learn them. They won't want you to live the hard lessons that they learned.
Right.
Yes, is a better, better way of saying it.
And if they're not willing to sit down with you, then they're not somebody that you want to be emulating anyway.
Exactly. Exactly. So John Erlob and his wife, Patty, being everything we want to be. Warbox, if you haven't experienced their product, there's so many good options out there. You can get them at your local grocery store, or go down to the brew house and get yourself a growler, get yourself some pierogies out at Buffalo Road.
Or Selena's Mexican Restaurant, or Marshall Street Bar and Grill, or Union Tavern.
You can
always
grab
selling
Warbox
products.
And see us.
Absolutely.
That's great, too. Lots of options here.
So many options.
So figure out who's doing it better and longer than you. Ask them for a coffee. Be bold.
Be brave.
And be the boss. Follow us, Bossy Rochester, Bossy Rock. Email us, bossyrock@gmail.com, BOSSYROC. And come be on the show. Tell us what you want the world to know. See you soon.
This has been a presentation of the Lunch Hour Podcast Network.